Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today, author Tina Field Howe is back for her second visit to the program. Tina is the author of two novels, Alyssa of the Fields, which we heard about on her last visit here, and her just-released sequel, The Trail Folk of Shunar Kun. Tina was inspired to write her sci-fi fantasy series for teens and up shortly after graduating college with a degree in anthropology and art. In addition to writing, Tina also illustrates her covers and interior artwork. She was recently awarded an Artistic Crossroads grant from the Arts Council of the Southern Fingers Lakes via the distributions of funds from the New York State Council on the Arts. The grant will be used to convert Alyssa of the Fields into an audiobook. Tina has just begun teaching graphic arts as an adjunct professor at Corning Community College in beautiful Corning, New York, where she resides, and her website is alyssabooks.com. So that said, welcome back to the program, Tina.
Thank you, Juanita. It's really good to be back.
Well, wonderful. You know, so many congratulations are for you today. This is your second book. You've just released it. Plus, I just found out that you have been awarded this really amazing grant. So you must just be feeling wonderful.
Well, it blew me away, too.
Mm-hmm.
I opened the letter and it said I had gotten it, but I did work really hard to get that, so go through the whole process. So. Yes, we have a really very active arts council here right in Corning. It covers a four-county area. We're so fortunate to have them.
Mm.
They have a member group exhibit every month and special exhibits, and they partner with other arts organizations in the area. So we're really, really fortunate.
Oh, so how did you get this grant? Tell us about it. And this really, at this point, must have been a huge validation for your work.
It was. How I actually went about getting it was the Arts Council is very active. I'm a member of the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes. We're just south of the Finger Lakes of New York State, which is Keuka Lake and Cayuga Lake and Seneca Lake. We're sort of at the base of all those lakes. It's not that far away to the gorgeous lakes. So there's a very active organization of people that run the Arts Council. So they have quite a nice outreach program for artists. And the first thing you have to do is go to attend one of their seminars that talks about the grant writing. That's a requirement, first of all.
Uh-huh.
I'd never done a grant before, so I was really clueless as to, you know, the process. But it's really pretty rigorous. You need to fulfill certain obligations in addition to, okay, so I had already written and published book one. And first you sort of have to convince them that it's a new work, because this is really specifically to help support new works. Well, it is a new work in a way, because I'm actually still in the process of converting the book into the audio script format, which would be like a radio play.
Okay.
With the sound effects. And so the script is a lot like the book, but where there are sound effects and things like that, or certain expressions that can be expressed by the characters, I can let them do that, and I can add the sound effects in. So, you know, there is some variation in the wording. But this is a really different kind of audiobook, because I'm using live actors to do the character voices.
Yes, yeah.
So I'm going to do the narration, the narrative part, and then have actors do all the characters.
It's so fun. I mean, you're going to have all of these other children, I guess, from what I understand.
And adults.
And I understand that you're looking for different accents. I mean, you are really, this is going to be something very unique.
I think it really is. I've listened to lots of audiobooks, and usually it's done in one voice.
And pretty flat.
One person does the whole thing, right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be like a movie without the visual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my intention, is to you know, hopefully I'll be giving many copies out to vision impaired organizations for the, you know, aging and hospitals and so on. So that's part of the fulfillment of the grant, as I'll be distributing a lot of these.
Oh, I see.
And the actual title of the project is bring the written word to life through an audiobook.
Oh.
And one of the things you have to do with any of these projects you get an arts grant for is to perform it in a non-arts venue. So what my plan is to take some of my actors and take some scripts and go to maybe a shopping mall or some other place, but it can't be like a library or an art exhibit area or any place where you might typically find something like this. It has to be a really unusual place.
Uh-huh.
And ask people to participate,
uh-huh.
to come up, grab a script, and read their part, you know, or read a part.
So
just to get the community to participate in it that way.
Now, are you doing this more for the promotional end of it, or is this just a project that's really captured your heart?
Well, from the very beginning, when I first got book one and started selling it, several people said, you know, I really don't have time to read. Are you going to make it into an audiobook? Because I have a 1-hour commute, and I would love to have it to listen to,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the way to and from work. I'm
mm-hmm.
like, oh, that. And right away, that went on my list.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a couple years ago now, about 2 years ago that book one came out. But it's been on my list ever since then. So even before I learned about the grant and started going through the process, I had already made all kinds of notes of what I wanted to do. I already come up with a character list of all the voices that I needed. Some actors can do multiple voices for the smaller role.
Mm-hmm.
But all the main voices that I needed, and I already had done quite a lot of work on it before I put the application for the grant.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to do it no matter what, whether I got the grant or not.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, are you nervous at all about finding the perfect voice for Alyssa?
Actually, I've got some of the other voices sort of in my mind of people I know that will work well, but Alyssa, I've not found an Alyssa yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not in my, I mean, I, but I haven't had the auditions. The auditions are coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so hopefully somebody will come, you know, come that will be perfect, and also we'll have the time, because it's going to be several hours of recording time.
Oh, yeah.
So it doesn't just have to be the right voice, but it has to be somebody that can get to the, you know, recording sessions and somebody who has the time.
Yes. Oh, yeah, you'll find it'll be a good fit. It'll be someone that's really committed, I'm sure, to the project. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like doing – I've done a lot of theater, so I'll be directing the whole process, too.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you really have to find, you know, find is somebody who can dedicate the time. But it's not like a regular – like a play, for instance, where you have, you know, all these rehearsals and hours and hours and hours and hours, you know, before the show goes on that you have to commit. So it's not going to be as big a commitment as a regular theater part would be.
Mm-hmm. So when are you thinking that whole audio project will be finished?
Well, my commitment is to finish it in 2009.
Okay, so you have the year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this year. I'm going to be holding auditions in a couple of weeks, and then I'm hoping to do all the voice recording through the winter, so through February, March, maybe into April. Then I want to spend the summer doing the sound editing and adding the effects and the music. And then I want to perform it in the fall. It'll probably be in November, I'm thinking, around, you know, maybe Thanksgiving holidays, find a nice, you know, busy mall and find some time and set up in there and do the performance part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be available, you know, to give away, and then sometime probably in 2010 will be available for purchase after that.
For purchase.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe even for the 2009 holiday season, depending.
That would be a good time.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll work out that way. But one of the commitments is to have it done in 2009. So,
you know, it's interesting.
I think it's doable.
Yeah, I think
really
it is, too.
I'm really not nervous.
No, I think you have plenty of time. And, you know, it's interesting, this project with an audiobook and the dedication you have and the time you're putting in, really, I mean, this can really serve you well in the long run if there is the potential of this possibly going to a screenplay or movie.
It already is a screenplay.
It already is a screenplay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I've already written the screen version. I entered that a while ago, and it was a quarter finalist in a contest called Scriptapalooza.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I've entered it in a few other contests, and I've also, there is an agent looking at it right now.
Oh.
But I haven't, you know, it's just, they're looking at it.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
exciting.
I mean, I'm just going to, I guess I believe in these stories, you know, so so much that I'm just like putting everything into it, you know, right now that I can, you know, my spare time. I really believe in the stories, and so many people have told me that they get so much out of them. They get, they see things, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. I mean, I didn't write it with that intention. I think I really wrote it. I don't know. Just something kept pulling, you know, something kept. I'm not trying to make stories that have a message, but I think a message comes out.
You know, that's really true. Well, you know, in our last conversation, I remember that you were saying that as well, you know, that you didn't want to be too heavy-handed with the themes, but that there are really genuine, deep themes that are coming out, and they're just kind of coming out spontaneously as you're writing.
Yeah. It's just the whole, I just love the writing process. And, of course, I love illustration, too. They work hand in hand to help me see the story. But there's something about the writing process. It's like you don't know where a lot of it comes from. You know, characters come up with things like, whoa. It just startles me sometimes, the things that they say or the things that they all of a sudden do. It's like so spontaneous, and it's just sometimes it almost freaks me out, but I love it. I write it down.
Yeah, you're born to write, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, I wanted to make mention to our audience that we had a great conversation in our first interview, and we went very much in depth about book one. So just to kind of really briefly get our audience today up to speed on who Alyssa is, tell us maybe a little bit about book one, and then we're going to go into what happens in book two.
Okay. Well, Alyssa, when it starts out, she's kind of a disgruntled 10-year-old, and she's very jealous because she's been an only child for 10 years, and this is from my life, by the way. This really happened to me. And she's all of a sudden got a brand-new little sister and despises her at first, but she learns. Alyssa is constantly going through a learning process. She's kind of stubborn, you know, kind of thinks that things should be a certain way, and then she learns all of a sudden something happens, and there's this whole other way of thinking or living out there. So she has an accidental meeting with someone from another tribe called the Trailmen, and this young man and she can speak, and it's not supposed to be possible that they can communicate. So she learns that. So she does a lot of learning between the time she's 10 and then suddenly 17, the next couple of chapters jump ahead a couple of years. And, of course, the bond with her little sister that she despised when she was born is very, very strong, and as well as her relationships with her mother. And she has a best friend called Sita, who's always been her lifelong friend. And when Alyssa gets to be about 17, she discovers that how really restrictive her society is. And so she starts to buck the process and gets a lot of trouble for it.
She's a rebel.
And she gets in a lot of trouble for going outside the norm, for not being a good little field folk girl, you know, what she was brought up to be. And the reasons of her society is so strict was because of survival. They're still surviving a cataclysm of 3,000 years before, a major war that nobody knew who started or what the circumstances were. So anyway, so the society's been very, you know, very carefully guarding the citizens. So Alyssa steps outside and gets to know the trailmen and another whole way of life, another whole philosophy of living. And she also learns about a supreme being, which they don't even, you know, fathom in her own society. So I don't know how much detail you want me to go here.
Yeah, no, you're doing good. So we'll
take it
then up to the beginning of book two. Where is Alyssa at that point?
Okay. Well, through book one, the two tribes, Alyssa's tribe and the other one, finally have to come together to defeat a common foe. So by the end of book one, they're accepting of each other. Some of them are good friends. Most of them are still a little leery, but at least they're accepting of each other. So the theme of book one is finding the champion who lives inside of you, and that's what Alyssa does. Yeah. So then book two begins. It's 4 years later, and they're on a quest to find a different group of people, and it has to do with orphans that are found at the end of book one. These children from somewhere out there, and nobody knows who they belong to, so they're looking for them. So So it's Alyssa and it's Zarin and it's a lot of the our other favorite characters from book one are in these groups of people that go out and are searching for the parents of the orphans.
So you have a lot of reoccurring characters then. I mean,
this
is a natural progression from book one.
Yes, I have it's 4 years later, so quite a few people have gone through some changes. They've actually changed their occupation. For instance, Oren, who had been Larissa, who had been Alyssa's fiance in the beginning of book one, he was a historian or a teller, and he has put that aside to become more of a technical person to try to figure out this old technology. So he's really developed in book two. Actually, a lot of the story is about Oren in book two and his development and who he is and what his dreams are. So Alyssa is definitely still very major, but now we're starting in book two to see some of the other people branch out a little bit. Her mother has just blossomed. Her little sister is growing up. So there's some new characters introduced, some important new characters introduced, which I'm going to bring some of them into book three, which is in the works too.
So who are some of the new players?
Some of the new players, there's a new player, a little girl. She's about 5-6 years old. Her name's Umbri. Umbri is one of Oren's favorites. She's very much interested in the old technology that they've newly discovered. And as are many of the field folk children are very interested in this new stuff that their parents have never seen or never knew about. So you see this whole new generation coming up. And since Oren was a very gifted storyteller, he's able to draw the children's interest in to the technology. So there's a lot of development around Oren and Umbri. And then Umbri's parents, her mother is actually a trailman, and her father is a field folk, and they married so they could adopt her. So even though they understood that the adoptions were temporary because they hoped that the parents would be found someday, there's a lot of tension around that, around who is a real, actually I think that's one of the themes around that that comes out is, what is a parent? Is a parent, is it always necessary for them to be biological?
Mm-hmm.
So that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those characters, and I developed the trailman characters a lot more. Book two, Alyssa spends a considerable time in the lowlands where the trailmen dwell during the winter. It's the first time that she has. So she learns a lot about their society and the things that they do during the winter, and she goes on a hunt for the first time, and it's totally bizarre to her. And so she learns a lot. She goes through a lot of learnings, but we get to know those characters a lot better, the trailman characters in book two.
Why was it so important for you to really contrast the details of the life of the trailman up against, like, Alyssa's experience being a field folk?
Well, I think that one of the major themes in my stories is tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Tolerance, diversity are very strong themes, and I think I've always been a very tolerant person, you know, tolerant of people's ideas. And, you know, I have friends, all kinds of friends, and, you know, we have really interesting conversations. And, you know, there's not just one way to be. You know, there are many ways that you can be and be happy and productive, and you don't all have to be alike. Alyssa and Zarin are still learning about each other.
Mm-hmm.
Book two.
Mm-hmm. And this is Alyssa's romantic interest.
Yeah. Why? Yeah, I want to blow up the book. Yeah.
Oh.
and she's still learning, and she even makes a comment, because he doesn't really talk that much about his ways and his people, and he spent the majority of the last few years in the mountains with her for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he just doesn't talk about his tribe that much. So she keeps learning new things, and she's like, how can I not know this? We've been together for 4 years. How can I not know this? You know, so she's still learning constantly.
Now,
he is too, and everybody's always learning and growing. I think that's a part of our, you know, our earth culture.
Yes.
You know, and lots of times we're not tolerant of that. It doesn't mean you have to become like somebody else. It just means you have to, you know, realize there are other ways of going about things.
So how important was it for you to showcase a masculine and feminine aspects of the characters. Was that something you were going for?
You mean Alyssa and Zarin?
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons, okay, that I put Zarin is on the cover now with
mm-hmm.
Alyssa.
Yes.
One of the reasons I put them both on book one, I just have Alyssa mm-hmm. leaning up against a tree in her favorite spot, you know. And everybody looked at it and said, and boys, oh, it's a girl's book. No, it's really not a girl's book. It's about a girl, you know, girl is the main character, but there are many, many very important male characters in the story, both from Alyssa's tribe, from, you know, Zarin's tribe, and many important characters of all ages and male and female in it. So book two, I said, darn, you know, I'm going to smack a guy in the cover too, because
mm-hmm.
then maybe when men and boys look at the book, they won't think, oh, it's a girl's book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But they are equally as important, you know. Masculine ways of looking at things, feminine ways of looking at things are very important too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just culture, but it's gender. You know, you have different ways of looking at things based on all of your experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Tina Field Howe. She has just published her second book, The Trail Folk of Shunar Kun, and you can find more about this book and others at AlyssaBooks.com. I was wondering if that popped up in any of the, you know, any of the storylines that are going on in your books where there's different cultures and there's not much known about them. They're in this discovery process. So I was wondering if a more masculine-dominated culture or a feminine-dominated culture, those traits you would associate with that, would be coming out in this.
Alyssa's tribe is definitely more masculine-dominated, her culture. The trailmen is much more equitable. There are many leaders who are women, but there aren't in Alyssa's culture. And that's one of the things that she learned firsthand when she ended up after she has an accident and she ends up in the trailman camp for a period of time. She's kind of like, whoa, wow, this is cool. And when she sees the women warriors, that really blows her. She didn't know about them, about that, you know, aspect of that society. And she's just like, she goes through a couple of days like in shock at all the things she's learning, you know. But she embraces it, and there's actually a character in book two, a field folk woman who embraces the trailman's ways, which blows us away too, blows
mm-hmm.
her away.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, a lot of the younger people are more accepting, and you know, if they can see a better way for them, good.
They embrace
go for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what Alyssa tends to do is sort of pick better parts of both cultures, you know, for her preferred way of doing something. She'll pick the better way for herself.
I think that's great inspiration right there.
I think, you know, I think in general, American culture, I think, is always trying to do that.
Yeah.
They maintain traditions, but, you know, you're allowed to choose, you know, what works best for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so great about America, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think this is probably the biggest theme of book two, being that we're a part of something greater than ourselves, and that really
right.
kind of rings with what you're saying right
mm-hmm.
there. And it kind of brings it into really a modern context. I mean, we're going through so much change in the world right now, and I think that it kind of just brings even more relevance to what you're writing about, because there are such really paralleling themes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I don't think there's any way that what's going on in the world around you can't affect your writing in some way. You know, there's just no way. I mean, if you're paying the least bit of attention, something's going to rub off. Something's going to influence you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested in politics and very interested in cultures and so on. And I could probably write nonfiction, but I don't want to write nonfiction. I want to write fiction.
Well, you're such a creator.
I love it. I love science fiction and fantasy. You're always my Ursula K. Le Guin, still my favorite sci-fi writer, I think. And you know, I just that's how I have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love to talk a little art here. Then, you know, here you are. You illustrated again your second book. So tell us a little bit about that process and how your art really supports the writing and how the book cover came about. I mean, it's just beautiful work that you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My son posed for me for Zarin. That's my son.
Oh.
And Alyssa is my niece, Caitlin. Yeah. And how the cover I really start thinking about when I first start the draft. But I didn't actually start the cover, like working on it physically, until I finished the first draft of the book. So once I finished the first draft, is when I have a small group of readers that I give it to, the book, to read.
Mm-hmm.
When I give it to my readers to read, is when I start the cover. It gets my mind off the text of the book.
Oh.
But I have the story pretty much in my head. And while I'm doing the story, I'm thinking about what am I going to put on the cover. You know, so I sort of visualize the places in the story better so that I can get them on the cover. I think it helps me get them into the cover better. So, plus when somebody's reading my stories, I like to put them there, like they're really there, you know, really in the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I try not to go into so much detail to get bogged down, but enough to so they can sort of look around and feel like this is surrounding them. So anyway, I started working on the cover when I gave the first draft out, and I try not to think about the first draft until I have the cover well underway. So the first element I created was Alyssa. So I just start drawing all the features and the kind of clothing. I just work it really slowly. It's sort of just a building. I do sketches, quick sketches, but my sketches, you know, just help me get going. And I really start doing it on the computer, you know, creating it on the computer. I use Illustrator and Photoshop to do all my artwork.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I can change my mind as much as I want. And
easily.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. And I make up custom textures for their clothing and the details and the hide and the different items like the wood grains and so on. I make up all my own textures so I don't use anything canned because I don't want it to look like I did it like it's digital. I don't want it to look digital.
Yeah,
I want
it
to look illustrated, like painted.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I drew Alyssa, then I drew Zarin, and then I drew Drongo, who was my corgi posed for me for that, by the way.
Oh, so sweet.
Yeah. I gave her longer legs, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because corgis have little stubby legs.
They do. Yeah, that doesn't look like a corgi.
No, I really, really long ears because the Peltie is the pet that the trailmen have. They're dog-like creatures. And those tall, tall ears, actually, when they're relaxed, they droop way down. So they're like not like a stiff, pointy ear like corgis have. But, so anyway, I start working on those elements, and then I placed them on a blank page, how I thought they might go on the cover, and then I hand sketched the background. So then I got the background, which I wanted them to be on this, you know, vista overlooking, or this mountain overlooking this vista of the pitted lands, and there's some other things in the artwork that occur in the book there, too. So there's some pyramids and some in a light, it's mysterious light in the distance, and things are on the cover.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So then I just did the whole background. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And then while I'm working on the cover, my mind is still working on the story. You know, it doesn't really quit, I think, until it's really, really done. And so I would get ideas when I'm working on the cover about things I could put in the story or change in the story, you know, tweak in the story.
So you're really doing an editing process right up to the very end then.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, where are you at with book three? Have you started? Where are you?
I've got some outlining done, you know, some snippets, I know who my new people are, two new groups of people, and I know where they're going to be. I know the surrounding geography and things like that. I know the beginning, middle, and end. I know most of the characters I'm going to take with me from, you know, the first two books, because everybody can't go. It's another journey. Everybody can't possibly go. So I've got to pick and choose, and I'm still at that point where I'm saying, oh, gee, I really want to take her. Oh, I want him to go. But if I do that,
it's going to be a thick book.
It's going to get too, yeah, it's going to get too complex.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So there's always the worry of people getting, you know, too confused and getting things too bogged down. But whoever I take, you know, probably, I mean, their parts are going to be more minimized.
How old will Alyssa be in book three?
I think book three is going to be just two years later.
Okay. Now, was that going to be it? Are you stopping with the trilogy, or will you go on? Or do you know?
I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
I think that I could come up because of new characters I've introduced, particularly toward the end of book two. It would be very easy to keep it going on and on and on. I could, you know, as long as the stories don't get stale. That's the thing. You don't want your storyline, your stories to be repetitive, you know. As long as I could think up new and exciting adventures, I could probably keep it going forever, you know,
mm-hmm.
This lifetime anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also some other things I want to work on. I have a couple historical novels I would love to do.
Okay.
So I may take a break after three and write this a couple that I have ideas for. The historical, which will be different for me, but that's okay because I love doing research. So I can do the research and I can, you know, bring out details, you know, that'll be really stimulating for me to do. So.
It will still really tap into your whole creative side, you know, because it is a novel, you know, that's based in a foundation of history. So, well, that's going to be very interesting to see where you end up going over the next few years.
Oh, it's, yeah. I would love to clone myself. Great, you know, if I could clone myself.
Oh, yes.
I could get a lot more done.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. So I wanted to ask you, as you're moving through these books with Alyssa and as she ages in your books, is it challenging at all for you to keep your writing to suit a young adult audience?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's really young adult and up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that if, you know, somebody starts reading with book one, I mean, Alyssa definitely is more mature in book two. She's grown up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But just like any adult, you never stop growing. You never stop learning. You never stop getting ahas. You know, you never, if we think we're grown up, we're crazy. We're not. We just don't ever really, really grow, you know, stop learning. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I think that, you know, if anybody starts from the beginning and reading them, I think they're going to find her growth and development interesting.
You know,
sometimes she takes one step forward and two steps back, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then she has to catch up. I mean, she still has some personal hurdles to get over in book two,
mm-hmm.
which are pretty much resolved, I think, at the end. She has a couple of real personal hurdles that she's working on. You know, one of them, a hangover from book one. She just can't let go of this certain individual who keeps floating in and out of her life, and she wishes would go away.
Uh-huh.
She can't. Yeah. So, but that gets resolved, and there's always going to be something. Now, I almost said it. I'm glad I didn't.
Don't give anything
book,
away.
Book three, she's got a whole brand new challenge, and I think it's going to be quite funny at times.
Oh, interesting.
So it's still going to be a learning process for her. And so I think we'll, you know, continue to see her grow for quite some time to come, and I don't think she'll ever really stop.
I love that about your books. You know, there's such a discovery process that's happening with all of your characters. It's really interesting to read.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
Who, I think everybody's life is a journey. Everybody's life is a journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So who are we looking at in book two here as the main antagonist?
In book two?
Yeah.
They're called the parents.
Just the parents, okay.
The parents, mm-hmm. yeah. They're not who you think. They're not who we think they are. And it's really no shock. You know, I think they're kind of suspicious from the beginning. you know, to the reader, and that's okay. But it's how the people react to them and how they come, you know, to have their suspicions aroused and how they come to combat it that I think is the interesting part. And it's also maybe, you know, where they came from that's also kind of a shocker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the reader. So in the beginning it's like, you know, well, yeah, it figures because of the way the guy smiled. Okay, well, okay.
Right.
You know, I think that you can only keep certain things surprise for so long, you know, or to a certain degree, because you have to get – the thing is, if you spring a surprise on the reader – and I've been surprised by things that just maybe put the book down. They're not comprehensible surprises. They're out of the blue surprises.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
I'd
much rather have my reader feel the suspicion up front and later be surprised by other things. So it's okay that readers are suspicious right off. It's okay with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's stuff that comes later that is better. You know what I mean? I don't want to trick anybody. I've really put down books by famous authors that spring this thing that made no sense. And it's like too convenient. I guess it's too convenient.
Just for the shock value.
For the shock value. And all it made me do is put the book down.
Yeah.
And not pick it up again. Seriously.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? After all that, now, just like that, he's this?
Yeah, right.
What? And I put the book down. I was really angry.
Yeah. That's not necessarily the most creative of writing, is it?
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about your new teaching job at the college, which has come about since the last time you and I spoke. So tell us a little bit about this.
Well, it just came about in the last month.
Oh, it was that soon. Okay.
Yes. Well, at Corning Community College, which is a two-year school in Corning, I'm actually a graduate of there a long, long, long time ago, there just became a vacancy for an adjunct professor. One of their others went to another university. So because I'm a member of the Arts Council, my name came up in a discussion when they were looking for somebody to take this person's place. So they contacted me. I said I would love to do it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm teaching an Introduction to Graphic Design program.
Wonderful.
And it's really fun. I'm learning a lot. There's another intro professor that I'm working with. I'm actually sitting in on her classes, which is fun to pick up pointers and so on. So we're just getting into the second week now.
It just
started last week. So
to be back into that kind of an environment just
must be
exciting for you.
I love
it.
Well, I've been doing quite a few workshops, like writing workshops, and also a lot of software kinds of training, graphics-related training for mm-hmm. several years.
Teaching.
Just like for small groups, right,
mm-hmm.
but small groups or one-offs, like I need to know how to do this particular thing. But this is more structured and more, you know, from beginning to end kind of class. So I think it's going to be a blast. It already is fun.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Are you still doing any of the other workshops?
From time to time. I'm going to be doing another one with another local school system, a five-week workshop.
Okay.
We're going to be creating a children's picture book.
Oh,
it's for an art class. So we're going to go from start to finish, and they're going to use one of the online sources where you can, you know, like print one book, you know, a couple of different sources, so that at the end they'll have a finished book.
Mm-hmm. And clearly you know how to...
Library and, pardon me?
Sorry, clearly you know how to do this because you came out with your own children's picture book
right.
a while back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Snailsworth, A Slow Little Story.
Mm-hmm.
And I have sequels to that plan, too.
Okay.
So I'm doing that too. So I've had quite a few things. I taught an online creative writing workshop. Was it last fall? I think it was. Wait, what month are we in? No, it was last winter. I did that, and that was a lot of fun. And there were people from all over the world in that one. So that was really cool. And it's so neat because I learn so much when I do teaching. I learn so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, it makes me recall a lot of things that maybe I haven't really thought about a lot, you know, recently and about art and design or whatever. And so it's just a real learning experience for me.
Life is so full for you right now.
Yeah, it's, well, I asked the universe to bring it on. So
And it is.
You know, all, you know, just bring it on because this is what I want to be doing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah.
So where, so right now you are really focusing on, obviously, the audiobook for
mm-hmm.
book one. And so book three will be kind of, don't know.
Mm-hmm. I'll really get into that after the audiobook is done because this is going to take so much concentration, you know, focus.
Yeah.
And with the teaching, and I also have do graphic design, like freelance kind of work, too. So I'm, you know, pretty busy with a multitude of things.
Busy, busy. Okay, yeah. So your website now, it's changed a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's alyssabooks.com. And
that's the one for the book series.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Alyssabooks.com. And then I still have my overall website. It's tinafieldhowe.com.
Okay.
And that's got an illustration link because I have a lot of other illustrations and commercial work and this and that, communications. And
yes, you're not new to all of this.
Pardon me?
You're not new to all of this, to this whole scene.
No, I've been at it for quite a while.
Yeah, you have. You have.
So, yeah, there's always something to do. You know, I don't get bored.
Mm-hmm.
there's no reason to ever be bored. So I'm always doing something, creating something. It's just I'm driven.
Yeah. I really hope to have you back for another chat once you come out with your audiobook and you do a big promo for that. I'm so excited. I want to hear how the auditions went and everything.
Okay.
So please come back.
I will do that.
Yeah, and it was just so good to talk with you again, Tina. I know it's almost, it's been almost a year, but we had talked a little bit prior to our interview today, and time is just going by so quick. So
I know it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Juanita, thank you very much.
And thank you, too, Tina. You take care.
Welcome.
All the best.
Okay, thank you. Same to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, listeners, that has been Tina Field Howe, and she was here today to talk about book two in her sci-fi fantasy series. It is called The Trail Folk of Shunar Kun, and I hope you enjoyed this update with Tina. Please do check out our first interview. It's up in the archives on Inside Scoop Live, and she just really went into great depth about book one and how the idea for it all came about. So we have a lot of information here about Tina and all of her work, so please do check it out as well. Her books can be purchased, and all sorts of more information can be found at alyssabooks.com. So I hope you enjoyed the interview. Thank you so much for tuning in again to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.